The BASTEM Global Competitiveness Conference and the U.S. Air Force presents Using Awareness of Natural versus Demonstrated Type Functions to Build Resiliency and Sustainable Effectiveness, a professional development seminar. Featuring Dr. Reggie Crane of the Air Force Technical Application Center. This session will introduce participants to the overall dimensions of type and how they contribute to workplace behavior, the eight functions produced from the overall type dimensions, the differences between natural and demonstrated use of the eight type functions, and the five dimensions of flexibility and their role in building resiliency and capability. Without further delay, the BASTEM Global Competitiveness Conference and the U.S. Air Force presents Using Awareness of Natural versus Demonstrated Type Functions to Build Resiliency and Sustainable Effectiveness, featuring Dr. Reggie Crane.
I said, can you recall what your letters are? Somebody would say, yeah, ESPN or something along those lines, right? Because normally what happens is somebody will come in, they'll do it to you, and they'll leave. And then they'll leave it up to you to kind of figure out, okay, so what do I do with this information? And so hopefully in the next hour or so, what I'll do is I'll allow you to kind of really get underneath this idea about type theory. So you have a real good understanding of how important type theory is and how it's playing out in your life day in and day out. So what I'd like for you to do right now, everybody have a writing utensil, a pen or pencil? I want you to turn your handouts over to the very back page, and I want you to just sign your name and today's date. Yes, ma'am. Just sign your name and today's date. On the back of that very last sheet, yes, sir. Just your name and today's date. Okay, so now, what I'd like for you to do now is I'd like for you to sign your name and today's date again. But I want you to change hands. How's that working out for you? Not good, it's okay. I can read it. Signature about the same. Here's the thing. When I asked you to sign your name and today's date the first time, what did you do? Which hand did you go to? The obvious. The one that feels most natural for you, right? And when I asked you to change hands, could anybody not do it? Raise your hands. You could all do it, right? Okay, we'll get to you. The thing is, that is what type theory is all about. According to Swedish psychiatrist Carl Jung, we all come to the planet hardwired with certain preferences that we just go to very naturally without thinking about it. But we also have these underdeveloped preferences, right, that are there and we use them, but they're a lot harder for us to kind of get into. And the idea, one of Carl Jung's core themes was about being able to better self-develop, to become more effective across the board by working on your lesser developed preference, right? So we're going to unpack Jung's theory. We're going to talk about a mother-daughter team, Catherine and Isabel, in terms of how they modified Jung's theory. And then we're going to get back to Jung's original theory as well. So I'm Dr. Reggie Crane from the Air Force Tactical Application Center, representing the Air Force here today. And again, it's my pleasure to be here. So this whole idea about type theory, its origin started with this gentleman by the name of Carl Jung, who was a Swedish psychiatrist. Now he was actually Sigmund Freud's protege, and he was tapped to take over the mantle of psychotherapy once Freud decided to move on. But something happened. They got into this significant fight about the nature of the subconscious, and they never spoke again as long as they lived. Can you imagine that, getting in a fight with somebody and it's so intense that you never talk to them again as long as you live? That happened with these two guys. And so because Jung was the junior of the two, it so bothered him that he started writing about it. And it kind of manifested itself in this book called Psychological Type. If you ever have any problem trying to get to sleep at night, keep Psychological Type by your nightstand, right? Because I have yet to get through the entire book. But the thing is, within the context of Jung writing about this, he was trying to figure out how people could be so different, he and Freud. And it manifested itself into this idea that Jung thought that there were three key worlds that we all occupy. There's the extroverted world, right? We're out about people, places, and things, engaging the outside world. Then there's the introverted world. We go inside to ideas, concepts, and theories in terms of how we get ourselves energized. Then he said, there's a way that we process information. We process information either as a sensor, where it's very specific. We want to see the facts. We want to be able to see it, feel it, touch it, smell it for it to be real. And there's the intuitive, the big picture possibilities. What could the information mean tomorrow or beyond? And then lastly, once we take the information in as a sensor or an intuitive, then it's about how do we prefer to make decisions, either as a thinking, a very logical decider, or as a feeling, a subjective decider. So that was Jung's core theory. I'm going to take the liberty and deputize everybody in the room today and say you are now on the police force. And I want you to imagine yourself on patrol one day and you see this car speeding by you. You put your lights on, you go, you stop them, and you let them know you were speeding. And they say to you, look, I got this new car. I was trying to figure it out. You know, it kind of got away from me, and I just didn't realize I was going that fast. How many people in here would give them a ticket regardless of the excuse? Raise your hands, okay? How many folks would be sympathetic and give them a pass, a warning? How many folks are kind of undecided about how they would approach it? Okay, the folks that would give them a ticket, that kind of cuts to the core of this whole idea about making decisions based on logic, right? If you speed, then you get a ticket. The ones that were saying, I might give them a break, they kind of have this subjective value system in terms of what's right and what's wrong insofar as they're concerned. They make decisions based on being in concert with their value system. So I want to point that out because there's this thought that thinking deciders don't feel, and feeling deciders don't think. What we're reducing this to as far as psychological type is concerned is just merely how you go about making decisions. That's it. That makes sense? Okay, cool beans. Okay, so how did Catherine and Isabel kind of build on Jung's theory? Great question. Catherine and Isabel was this mother-daughter team that actually had this family where everybody in the family was so different, right? And they were kind of infatuated by it. They wanted to kind of figure out what makes these folks so different. So they started kind of doing some low-level research. They were not trained psychiatrists. They had no practical training in this whole background, but they wanted to kind of explore this idea of difference. Well, come World War II comes, and what happens is that women start to enter the industrial workforce for the first time. And so what Catherine and Isabel said, maybe there's a way for allow us to create some kind of an instrument where women can kind of understand what their preferences are to allow them to better self-select into jobs that they could be good at. Well, Catherine and Isabel, unlike me, picked up Jung's book, read it, understood it, and took and figured out how to start building this MBTI assessment. They took Jung's core three dichotomies, but they added one. They added judging and perceiving, because what they said is that they wanted to be able to depict what the outside world sees. And what Catherine and Isabel said, if you are a judger where your last letter is a J, the outside world sees you trying to bring things to closure. If your last letter is a P, perceiver, the outside world sees you being open to options and trying to generate new options through getting new information. Now, Young was pleased with the idea that Catherine and Isabel picked up his book, read it, and kind of created this assessment. But what he wasn't pleased about was this. When you look at this, just understanding psychological type theory, and you look at that table, what does that say to you? Only 16 types. What else does it say to you? I'm sorry? Boundaries? Okay, what else? You fit in a box. A lot of different people in the world, right? One of the things that Jung did not intend for to happen with his work was to have people put into categories. Again, his whole idea was through self-awareness, we better self-manage. And through that, we better develop as adults. But he realized that in reading the book, that most people would go directly to that place in terms of trying to categorize people. Now, Jung realizes that there are some similarities among same types, but there's also a uniqueness. And when you put people in a box and they see that, okay, my letters are ISTJ, people are normally prone to want to go into that box and set up shop. I'm an ISTJ, and you better learn how to deal with me as an ISTJ or else, right? So fast forward, Dr. Roger Pierman. Roger was a big user of MBTI for the, 25, 30 years. And he, unlike Reggie Crane, read Jung's book, understood it, and he thought that what Catherine and Isabel did was they stepped outside of what Jung's intentions were. So he went back to MBTI, the core of what Jung's theory was as far as type was concerned. As you can see here, if you've ever taken the MBTI before, what you see in terms of introversion, extroversion, whatever your preference is, it shows you what your score is here. But what it doesn't show you is what's on the other side, right? And so Roger was doing this workshop with these folks called the Young Presidents Association. And these are folks that before the age of 40, they've amassed fortunes of $25 million or more in their companies. And he was doing a normal MBTI brief. And one of the people asked him, they said, well, Dr. Pierman, I see you got a score for me in introversion. What about extroversion? Well, I have a score over there. And Roger said, well, yeah, you do. And so he started thinking about it. And so he backed up and he started talking about type in a whole different way. He said, okay, here's the deal. We do have our introverted and extroverted world in terms of how we get our energy. We do have perceiving in terms of how we prefer to process information, sensory intuitive. We do have judging in terms of how we choose to make decisions. But Carl Jung's original intention was this. Not that we have a JP dichotomy, but we exercise the sensing, intuition, thinking, and feeling functions both in the extroverted world as well as the introverted world. So now there's no boxes now. Now what Roger says is that Jung intended for it to be an energy system in terms of how we get our energy, how we process information, and how we make decisions. And we have access to all eight of these functions all the time. So let's meet the functions. Extroverted sensing. These are folks with this kind of preference. They scan the environment and they are totally aware of everything that's in their immediate surroundings, and they have this sense of urgency to act on some of the things that they see. You ever see somebody can walk into a room and when they get into the room right away, they can kind of tell you what's around them? These folks exercise this extroverted sensing function. Now, you don't have all this in your handout. I didn't want to kill a whole lot of trees, but if you want to get access to this, I think it's in the database that Bea has. You can kind of get access that way. Or you can give me an email and I'll send you a copy of it that way as well. Introverted sensing. These folks are focused on consistency and reliability of the information. They are focused on making sure the information is accurate, and this information can be depended on to be used in the same way in a consistent fashion. extrovert intuition. These are folks that love to brainstorm, talk about ideas, possibilities, looking for a third way ahead that wasn't available a few minutes ago to make sure we can consider that amongst our options. Introvert intuition. These folks are looking at scenarios and possibilities while reflecting on what's going on in their immediate surrounding. And these people normally have what's called a third sense, where they can see way out over the horizon long before anybody else can do that in any kind of a logical way. Extroverted thinking. You probably know a lot of these folks, right? Because they're very analytical and very critical of situations because they're trying to find the best outcome. So it sounds like critique of people, but it's critique of ideas, trying to make sure that we get the best outcome in terms of what we're trying to get done. Introverted thinking is reflective problem solving. They're kind of looking for what's the logic in the situation? What is the precise working hypothesis that's going on in a particular situation? Extroverted feeling. These folks are focused on trying to build consensus, trying to make sure that they understand what other people are thinking about, what's important to them in the equation. And they normally use empathy as a way of trying to focus on getting at that information. Introverted feeling. These folks are idealistically looking for the right action to take that's consistent with their mission, their values, and their choices. They make decisions based on a subjective value system in terms of what they believe is right or wrong. So you can see how this differs from the MBTI. And also, we talked about the idea that the MBTI did not allow you to understand what your opposite number was based on your preference, right? So here you can see this individual taking the Pillman Personality Integrator, they have an extroverted preference, but also allows you to see what your score was on the introversion scale as well. So it builds to the notion that you are not one or the other. You have access to both. And that's really, really important because, you know, one of the questions that a lot of folks who are MBTI practitioners get asked over and over and over again is, how come when I'm at home, I'm one way, but when I go to work, I'm different? Well, we're going to talk about that in 1 second. Normally, the way that you show up at home is natural. You're into your natural preferences there, right? In terms of, you know, different levels, very natural down to somewhat natural. And that's where the pull is. That's where the strongest pull is for you to actually focus on things that are very natural for you. When you're at work, now you're compelled to focus on what you have to demonstrate, what's required of you. And sometimes what's required of you may be different from what you are naturally doing at home. As an example, here's a person that has a natural preference for introversion, but based on where they work, they have to focus on extroversion. So what do you think that causes in that person when they got to operate that way? Conflict. What else? Fatigue. Stress. One of the reasons that Roger actually created the Pillman Personality Integrator is he said that over the past 35 to 40 years, more and more people have been put in situations at work where they've got to do things that they're not comfortable doing. And in my research for my doctorate, I discovered that during the Great Recession, a lot of companies, in order to meet the bottom line, cut personnel temporarily. And some of those companies realize that, you know what, we can really gain some efficiencies by not bringing those folks back. Some companies didn't care about that. They just said, we're not bringing it back anyway because the numbers are what they are. Now, in all fairness, there probably was some companies that identified some efficiencies in terms of having too many people. But there were some companies that gained those efficiencies because if I worked for them, I'm busting my butt because I don't want to be one of those next folks to get laid off. Those companies have created a situation where there is a whole lot of that conflict, a whole lot of that strife, and a whole lot of that stress. One of the reasons that Roger did this is to make sure that we understand when that's happening, there's a lot of stuff going on. And it's almost like, what happens when your car needs a front end alignment? Will it still run? Yeah. The more you run it, what's happening? It's gearing to the left. The wheels are being worn. I mean, there's a whole lot of stuff that you can't see going on that is having an impact on the operability of your vehicle. The same concept here, when you're under that kind of stress on a consistent basis, there's stuff going on below the surface that is going to eventually manifest itself in some way. Maybe health, maybe, you know, workplace issues, maybe a whole lot of different things, right? So the idea that Roger wants to kind of put across here is that none of us are going to be immune from being able to demonstrate sometimes doing things that we're not comfortable doing. That's the reality that we all got to face, right? And Roger calls that flexing. The idea is that to understand it's okay to flex, but you have to figure out why you're flexing, be able to flex effectively, and then realize that because you have to flex in a certain situation, you don't stay there. You got to come back to what's natural. Because if you don't, and you hang out there in that flex position too long, all the things that you talked about just now are going to happen. Now, in terms of developing type and understanding more about this whole idea about flexibility, Roger also created this thing called the Flex Index Skills that help us to be able to understand if we know when we're flexing, here are some skills that we can use to help us to flex effectively. Proactivity. It really is about just kind of understanding what you're into and taking some proactive action, taking some action that you're consciously doing to make sure that when you're flexing, that you're doing it in a very deliberate way, right? Composure. Being able to make sure that you don't allow yourself to kind of get rattled and start reacting, but just kind of maintain your composure and figure out how do I move through this process in a meaningful way. Connectivity. Being able to reach out to other people, find somebody who can help you be able to flex in an effective way through different relationships you don't have right now. Variety seeking. We know that change is a word that not a whole lot of folks are comfortable with, right? So the idea here is to kind of start practicing doing some different things, getting used to the whole idea about change. And then lastly, rejuvenation. This kind of goes to a whole lot of things that, you know, I always try to make sure I mention wherever I talk. So forgive me. But how many folks have some kind of a regular exercise regimen that you do day in and day out? Show of hands. Come on, we should have all hands up, right? All hands should be up. And it's just, if you just walk around the block, just doing something, right? Because this whole idea about rejuvenation and stress and coping, those days are not going away, right? They're here to stay, and they're going to probably become more profound as we continue to progress in our careers. Where you are right now, some of you probably only have to be concerned about yourselves. What happens when you find yourself in a situation now where you have folks you're supervising, or maybe you're leading a division, or maybe you're leading a company? That is going to create more and more of a challenge for you to kind of show up in a whole different way. So the idea is that we have to make sure that we're figuring out some ways to recover and cope in a very, very meaningful way. I think it's page 4 in your packet. What I want you to do is, if you look at those top, on the left-hand side where it says natural, you look at these top 4 functions, these are your perceiving functions in terms of how you prefer to process information. Take a minute and look at these extroverted sensing and intuitive functions. Extroverted sensing, introverted sensing. Extroverted intuition, introverted intuition. Look at those 4 and identify the one block of these 4 that is most natural for you to do. Is it most natural for you to focus on your immediate surroundings, to kind of go inside and think about, you know, information, that things that have happened in the past? Is it most natural for you to focus on generating possibilities or looking in the future at scenarios and in the future horizons? What is most natural for you of those four functions? Yeah, of the top four. One, just one. Sensing intuition, either in your introverted world or your extroverted world. One of those you gravitate to more, you do them all, but one you gravitate more to than the others. Identify that one. And once you've identified the one perceiving function that's most natural for you, I want you to drop down to introverted thinking, feeling, introverted feeling, and identify the one of those four that's most natural for you. Analyzing and critiquing situations, seeking a working hypothesis, focusing on connectivity with others, or making decisions based on your personal value system in terms of your mission, your values, lined up with your choices. Which one of those four decision-making processes is most natural for you? So you should have two boxes checked. One for the top in terms of perceiving, introverted sensing, extroverted intuition, one of those boxes checked. And down below, one of the thinking deciding functions. Extroverted feeling. Should be two blocks checked on your left-hand side. Now, I want you to flip over to the next column, right, where it says demonstrated. And I want you to identify of those top four, which one of those perceiving functions do you have to do most often? Yes, based on where you work, if you go to school, which one of those functions on top of the sensing functions do you have to demonstrate most often? The left side is what's most natural for you. The right side is now, which one do you have to demonstrate most often? And then when you identify the perceiving function that you have to demonstrate most often, drop down and identify the judging function that you have to demonstrate most often. Thinking, introverted, extroverted, feeling, introverted, extroverted. So you should have four blocks checked here momentarily. One that talks about which of these perceiving functions is most natural for you and which of these deciding functions is most natural for you. Now on the right-hand side, which of these sensing functions do you have to demonstrate most often in work or school? And down below that, which of these thinking functions do you have to demonstrate most often based on being in work or school? Now the million-dollar question is what? Based on what's natural for you as far as sensing, is that what you have to demonstrate most often? Based on what's natural for you to make decisions, is that what you demonstrate most often? How many folks are lined up perfectly? Natural, demonstrated. No hands went up, right? So what does that say? We're flexing, right? Let me ask this question. How many of you did you realize that you were flexing? Did you feel as though you were flexing? Yeah. And you know, and I think we have to do it, so we figure it out, right? But there's a cost to that, right? So just as an example, somebody that has a natural preference for introverted sensing, but then has to demonstrate extroverted intuition, that's causing them to flex in a major way, right? So when you find yourself in a situation where you have to flex, it's important now to look at engaging those flex index skills. And the flex index skills that are associated with flexing from introverted sensing are proactivity, looking at new ways to do old things, and then variety seeking, trying to figure out new and improved ways to test yourself beyond things that are comfortable for you to do. And there's some ways that we talk about doing that insofar as extrovert intuition is concerned, in terms of flexing from introverted sensing onto something else. But the idea is that once you take the pyramid assessment, right, and you get your results, and you understand, okay, I'm flexing maybe 6-7 hours a day. I'm not sure that's realistic or not. But I'm flexing for a prolonged period of time throughout my day. Because it's my job, I've got to do it. I'm not pushing back on that. But I need to make sure to take care of myself, to make sure I can be a good resource to my organization. I need to make sure that I understand how to effectively embrace this flexing in a way that allows me to build some resiliency. That's what it's all about. That's one of the reasons that Roger built those index skills, is to allow us to build some resiliency to make sure that when we're flexing and we know we're flexing, here is how we can figure out a way to effectively flex and then come back home. Kind of bad on time sometimes. I want to make sure I keep you guys on track. So any questions about that this far? And I know for some of you, in terms of just getting introduced to these eight functions, it might be just a little new right now. That's why I tried to put some one lines below each one of them. So when you get out of here, you can kind of think about that a bit more and just kind of say, okay, now really, where am I at in terms of what's natural and what have I got to do? And then, you know, I'll put in, If you send me an email, I'll send you some more detailed information about this, because I don't want to leave you hanging out there with not a whole lot to go. I just didn't want to kill a whole lot of trees in terms of coming in here today.
You're listening to Using Awareness of Natural versus Demonstrated Type Functions to Build Resiliency and Sustainable Effectiveness, a professional development seminar featuring Dr. Reggie Crane, brought to you by the Bay of STEM Global Competitiveness Conference and the U.S. Air Force, where we stand at the intersection of America's future. Be sure to check out our social media pages on Facebook and Twitter.
So here's the thing, right? In terms of getting back to Carl Jung's original concept about this idea of developing personality and developing type. Everything that we do in terms of trying to develop is costly. But this whole idea about trying to develop personality, that really is it's a marathon. It's a constant engagement on taking some very specific action to do some very specific things. And one of the things that makes it most challenging is that, you know, according to what Jung says, is we all come to the planet hardwired for one preference or another. So when we find ourselves in situations where we have to flex, we're going against what's natural for us. We're going against how we showed up on the planet. But Jung's intent also was that from an adult development standpoint, it's important for us to realize that we have to figure out what our preference is, what's most natural for us, and then understand what that underdeveloped preference is and realize that the growth in our effectiveness really comes in being able to work on that underdeveloped preference, not to make it even with the other one, but to make it just effective enough for us to be more effective in terms of getting things done in a resilient way. Does that make sense? So if I'm a real clear extrovert, when I go to meetings, people might not like me sometimes, right? Because all I need to do is come into the meeting and hear a word, I'm ready to go. Well, when I'm doing that, say there's a person who has a clear introverted preference. Extroverts are not trying to just dominate the floor. They're talking their thing through out in the open because they have to, right? The introverted preference person is doing the same thing, but they're doing it inside. So when the introverted preference person gets to the point where, okay, I'm ready now, then they'll share. Meanwhile, the extroverted person is kind of dominating the stage and maybe creating some challenges for the introverted preference person who's trying to think through and get their ideas squared away. So as an extroverted preference person, for me, what I've learned to do is, okay, when I go into meetings, I say, okay, Reg, you know how you are, right? So even though you're chomping at the bits to get in, take some notes, right? Write some things down. Allow other folks to engage. And then once enough engagement has kind of gone on, then you can kind of come in and maybe chime on what somebody else has already said. So it's not like we're just dominating the floor. So I have to better self-manage myself as opposed to putting it on the introvert to talk more. Now, on the flip side, sometime with the introverted preference person who is looking to get the full idea, maybe what you have is good enough to put on the floor to allow you to make a contribution to the conversation. Maybe sitting down and waiting until you get it fully developed, you could be losing some opportunity to make a contribution to the conversation. Maybe not fully, but maybe the little bit you have is good enough for what you're trying to get done. So the whole idea is to try to find ways to enable for the introverted preference person to better self-manage themselves, and then for the extroverted preference person to better self-manage themselves as well. That's how we figure out a way to make sure that we can leverage diversity. Because there's value in the extroverted preference person, and there's value in the introverted preference person as well. Both have value. This is not right or wrong, good or bad. It's about how we're hardwired and having an awareness of that, and then being able to better self-manage in a way that allows us to maximize our effectiveness as individuals, at the same time connecting with other people as well. That makes sense? Okay. What questions do you have?
First of all, thank you so much for that presentation, but I was curious if in your expert, in your experience, you've come across particular assessments that are more or less effective in terms of talking about some of the roles that are more, that certain personalities might be more effective in.
Yeah, absolutely. There's an assessment that I use called the Team Management Profile. It comes from a company called Team Management Systems in the UK. And Charles Majerison and Dick McCann were the creators of this. And they had an organizational development business. And one day, one of their clients posed a question: what is it that comprises a high-performing team? And Charles and Dick couldn't answer the question. They took a year off and went and visited several companies who claimed to have high-performing teams and gathered all this data, right? Then they affinitized it down, and it kind of centered around eight functions, maintaining the function that focuses on what's really important to us as an organization, the advising function focusing on making sure that we know what we need to know, innovating, are we pressing against the status quo, exploring, are we really making sure that we're selling the appropriate stakeholders on what's going on, developing, are we looking at all the options and then choosing a methodical way to move forward, organizing, do we have the resources in place to make it happen, producing, are we delivering what we said we deliver? And lastly, inspecting, are we adhering to standards? Those eight functions, in terms of what they describe as far as work is concerned, there's a personality piece attached to that as well. And that personality piece now allows you to understand, amongst those eight functions, which of these roles do you gravitate to more, and then what are the two lesser roles? So you identify three particular roles based on the functions and what they do that you have a preference for. Now, there are some companies that use that assessment as a condition of employment because they've taken the functions and looked at what's in those functions and aligned those functions to work that they have in their organizations. And so the only caveat I say there is what Charles and Dick says is that because Reggie has a preference for advising, gathering information, it doesn't mean Reggie's good at that. But what they've said is, if you have a preference for something, there is a higher probability for you to learn the skills to be able to get it done. And that's why people use that a whole lot more.
Thank you so much. I'm sorry. And that was the team management?
Profile.
Profile.
TMP, yes.
Thank you so much.
Yep. Other questions? Yes, ma'am.
I took a job a year ago this month as a chief of staff for an engineering executive. I didn't ask all the right questions at the time. I got into the position and found out that we are total opposites. I'm an introvert, he's an extrovert, and I'm trying to figure out how to work effectively with him because I'm really his business partner.
That is not uncommon, right? And I can tell you it's not uncommon because I've lived that experience. Here's the thing. I think it's like anything else, right? You know, my name is Reg Crane. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Reg Crane. I'm an introvert. My name is Reg Crane. I'm an extrovert. Having awareness about what those preferences are in terms of how people are showing up and then being willing to say, okay, maybe there's some ways that you and I are not getting on well now together, but maybe there's a way for us to better understand ourselves as individuals to then be able to leverage our strengths in a really, really meaningful way. And when I work with clients that have those kind of situations, that's kind of what I do, because it's not about the fact that somebody's right and somebody's wrong. People are kind of showing up as they are, right? And normally people who are in positions of leadership have shown up that way their entire life, and they've been rewarded time after time after time. So now you got this situation where, okay, however I'm showing up, it's producing results. Because, you know, 20 years ago, you know, I was here. Now I'm here, right? So I gotta be doing something right, and they are right. You are doing a lot of things right. But again, it's that lesser developed function that if we work on trying to build capacity there, it could allow us to become more effective. And I think what I would recommend, right, is if your boss is kind of open to it, is saying, look, why don't we call some, and there are several people. I mean, where are you from? Seattle. There's several folks, I mean, in that area locally that administer at a minimum the MBTI, right? And say, let's take that. And let's kind of sit down. But what I would really say, make sure you do some homework, right? And let the folks know what you're trying to do. Because some people will come in, again, do it till you and leave, right? And say, okay, now you figure it out. Let them know what your strategy is, what the challenge is, what you're trying to work through. And I think that there'll be some awareness raised. Now, what happens after the awareness is raised is now an individual choice. Because I tell you, there's some people who will say, well, okay, I get it. And, you know, and so just realize that because the awareness is there, that is not going to guarantee that folks are going to be willing to do the work. But if they're willing to do the work, it could be a really, really powerful moment.
Monica Hurley. My question is, I take these assessments and I come across a lot of questions. I'm like, I don't know which way I'm in. How do I make sure that I'm like divorcing what I think people want from what is actually true about me, so then I can answer these questions right and then find myself in a position that I actually will enjoy? Because that's, I'm struggling with that. I keep saying, oh, I want this, and I get there, I don't want it.
So let me make sure I'm getting it right. So you take the assessment.
I take the assessment. There's a number of questions where I really don't know the answer.
Okay.
Like they ask you want to do this or this. I'm like, I don't know.
Okay. So, okay, I think I'm getting it now. So therefore,
I think it's mostly what you
do answer the question though, right?
Yeah, but I think that most of the time for those, it's kind of like I'm answering what I think people want, or I think is supposedly the right answer, and not what I actually think and feel.
Okay, so here's the thing, right? This is rule of thumb for every assessment you take. Take the assessment based on what you think, what you feel. When you look at the question, it's all about you. Because if you try to answer those questions based on what you think somebody else want or what you think you might want to become, you're going to have results, right, that's going to leave you in a place where you're going to be saying, okay, maybe. But the idea is that when you take the assessment, you really want to get a as pure as possible result that says, okay, this is how I'm showing up. Now, based on how I'm showing up, am I good with that? Or if not, are there some things that I want to change, that I want to work on some things to develop some things? But if you don't answer those questions based on how you are, you're never going to get a result that is going to allow you to say, okay, now I got this information. I know I answered those questions. Now, how am I showing up, right? I mean, what does this really mean to me? And I think that's where, whenever you take the assessment, having somebody to really debrief you in a way where they can take you through a conversation to better understand what those results mean to you in terms of the impact that you're having, how you're showing up, how effective you are. That's a really powerful conversation to have, because through that conversation now you can kind of figure out, okay, so what do I want to do next, if anything at all? But you got to be in a position where you have a good foundation, you got a good result that you can look at and say, okay, I may not be 100% with this. I'm 85 and 90% saying this is good for me. Now, what does that mean to me? And how do I want to take those results now and figure out how do I move forward?
Okay.
That makes sense?
Yeah. I just got to figure out how to figure
it
out.
And I think that really is, what's your name, sir?
Charles.
Yeah, I think that's a really powerful response, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever your initial feeling is, that's normally you saying, yeah, this is me. But sometimes that initial feeling, you're like, no, that ain't me, right? You want to try to make it what you want it to be. But I think staying with that gut initial reaction is going to get you the best result. Yes, ma'am.
Is this test available online, or is it a cost associated with it, or how can you get the Pearman?
Yeah, the Pearman is a Class B assessment, right? So therefore, you have to take it with somebody who's certified to deliver it. Right now, I think there's maybe about 75 or 80 people in the country certified to administer it. It's a relatively new assessment. I went to get certified, I think, about 2 years ago. I went to the very last certification that Roger did. And I'm so glad I went, because sometimes when you go and somebody else is leading the certification, I mean, they could be really smart, but when you're getting certified by the guy or lady who wrote it, I mean, there are questions you can ask that you can't ask anybody else. And then Roger was actually, he agreed to be a part of my dissertation research as well. So I got a hope. He let me get a peek inside some things that other folks don't have access to. I thought it was really, really powerful. And I think the guy is a genius. But yeah, the Pearman has to be delivered by somebody who is certified to do it. What area are you from? If you zip me an email and you get my email, I'll look at the list and I'll see if anybody, Roger's in North Carolina, but I'll see if anybody else is in North Carolina who is certified to administer it. I'll get that information to you.
Hello, I'm Vonetta with Boeing. So I was trying to think of how to ask the question. So as you go in and take this assessment, is it possible, are we supposed to think about it like how I show up in the job I do, or with the manager I have, or because?
Yeah, well, yes. and here's the thing, right? When I work with folks with the Pearman, right? And I say, okay, make sure as far as the natural is concerned, that's what you naturally connect with, right? But in terms of demonstrated, I say, focus on the space that you spend the lion's share of your time in, right? To figure out what you have to demonstrate. Because there are a lot of different nuances in terms of I got this and I got that. But if I got an 8-hour day and five of those hours are doing something, or you can sit down and kind of look at a percentage and say, okay, 70% of my day or is devoted to this area right here, I would kind of make sure I focused on that area as far as a demonstrator is concerned, because that's going to give you a true depiction of what you have to demonstrate. And if you're flexing, what you have to flex to most often, then something might be isolated.
Okay, and then so if you find that you're flexing for 75% of the time, does that mean that can you still be successful, or does that mean you maybe need to explore?
That's a big question. Let me answer like this, right? That's a lot of flexing.
Yeah.
You know, and so sometimes that means that maybe there's job misalignment. Maybe there are some things that I'm doing that maybe could be done or should be done by somebody else. Maybe there's a different role for me. I don't want to advocate going in and saying, boss, I heard this dude Reggie Crane, man, and I'm done. I don't want to advocate that. But I mean, you know, that's a lot of flexing to do, right? I mean, to even try to use the flex index skills to be resilient, that's a lot. You know, so sometimes it's a matter of sitting down and, you know, there's a, in my dissertation research group, there was a young lady in the group and the whole idea was about communication. They had to find a communication challenge they were having at their job, and then, you know, work on that. This young lady went back and she was having a real issue with her boss. And she sat down and she explained it to him. You know, I don't know whether you know it or not, but, you know, I feel like disrespected when we have our meetings. And I'm not angry with you, but I want you to understand that I see that, and I don't know if you intend to do that. Well, he was totally, like, bewildered. He said, I had no idea I was doing that. And then she talked about, well, also, there's these things that you got me doing, right, that I don't understand why I'm doing those things. It's taking me a whole lot more time to get that done beyond the things that I'm required to do. Can we look at it? And he said, I had no idea. This whole idea about one of the reasons I chose communication effectiveness as my dissertation topic was it's one of the things that we don't do well in the workplace because we don't receive a whole lot of training in high school and college, any place to prepare us to be able to go in and sit down, especially talking to bosses about things like that. And so, you know, empathy, being able to see the world through somebody else's eyes, assertiveness, being able to not aggressively, but, you know, say what needs to be said, and then shared interests. Being able to make sure that, as opposed to me having a position and you having a position, what do we share in common that we can kind of talk about that will allow us to be able to have a meaningful conversation about the things that we need to talk about so that we're not going in like this, but we're going in like this. That there's no way to get around having a conversation beyond having a conversation. And I think a lot of times, because we don't have those conversations, there are things that are going on that, you know, with all respect, there's some people that are just oblivious to certain things, right? Because everybody is focused on trying to do what? Get the job done, produce the result, whatever that is. That's what the effort is. And so now, and you look at that, and I don't know about Boeing's situation, but I know for the average company, 15, 20 years ago, whatever manpower or woman power pool they had, that has diminished. They ain't coming back. And so now you're talking about people that are juggling multiple responsibilities and folks that are in charge trying to make sure they're producing, they're showing the numbers, they're showing the metrics. I mean, the bottom line is what it needs to get done. And sometimes we in leadership roles don't sit down and make sure we understand. Covey has a thing called production capability where you can just...
Question.
I'm sorry, I'm just running. Okay.
No, you're
stop,
kidding, you're
fine. Rewind. Back on you, ma'am.
No. And just my follow-up question. It was really more of, and I apologize if you've already answered this, but if you want to take the assessment and then work with a coach or somebody to kind of say, now let's really talk about my results and what that really means to me. Is there someone like that?
Yes.
That you would recommend?
Okay. Where are you from?
Ohio.
Ohio. If you zip me an email.
Yes.
Then I will look at the master list and I'll see if we have somebody in Ohio to do that with you. And, you know, for folks who, there's nobody in your area, I'd be willing to work with you as well, right? I mean, you have to be, you know, we'll got some convenient time to do that, but I'd be willing to do that for you. Okay. And let me be clear about that. I'm not charging you for that. You have to pay for the assessment, but I'm not charging you for working with you on that.
Okay. Perfect. Okay. And right. Your email address information is?
It'll be coming right up here. Bingo. So, yeah, Covey has this thing called production versus production capability, right? And it's a really, really important point that kind of ties into resiliency and flexing. There was this guy that worked in this company where they produced newspapers. He worked in the machine room. And this guy's production was going through the roof. He got promoted, right? The guy comes in behind him, sits down. And what's the first thing he does? He examines the inspection tags on the machine to see when they were last inspected. And guess what? They hadn't been inspected in quite some time. So what does he do? He shuts down the line, right, to get things inspected. Production does what? It goes down. So now, when Reg was there, man, things were going through the roof, man. You know, now Charlie comes in, and he's a slow leak. If we don't take care of the production capability, people that are producing, getting the work done. If we don't take care of that capability, it may get us a lot of benefit short term, but it's not going to get us long term. We got to care for that capability, right? We got to nurture it. We got to make sure it is what it needs to be. Other questions? Yes, ma'am. There is a, there are quite a few books. I probably should have organized myself better in terms of having some stuff for you. I apologize. But Covey, Seven Habits for Managers, right? He talks about that in the Seven Habits for Managers and not the Seven Habits, I don't think, right? Same Seven Habits, but the Managers has a different twist to it. It's all about trying to, it's three stages now, better self-manage to then lead others, and then to unleash potential, right? So it's the same, thank you, Andrew. Same kind of thing. Man, thank God for that guy, 15 minutes. Okay, so same deal. But I would recommend Googling the Pearman Personality Integrator and Roger Pearman, because, there's a guy named Dario Nardi. Yeah, Dario, D-A-R-I-O, Nardi, N-A-R-D-I. He has a book called Understanding Yourself and Others. And he goes into a lot of detail about the eight functions: extroverted sensing, intuition, thinking and feeling, introverted sensing, intuition, thinking and feeling as well. So he provides a lot more data about those functions that we talked about that's in the Pearman Personality Integrator. I would also Google Team Management Profile, TMS, to learn a bit more about those functions, because I think those functions are really, really important. I mean, because not just in terms of understanding what you're most prone to, but one of the things that research has shown is that when you have meetings, how many folks have gone to a meeting and sat down in the meeting for half an hour, 45 minutes, and they walked out of the meeting and was like, okay, so what was that about? One of the ways that they use these functions is they say, okay, we use the functions to have function meetings. So we say we're going to have an advising meeting next Tuesday. That means that we come into that meeting with everybody focused on addressing the question, what do we need to know? That's it. Everything else gets parked. And so what they discovered is that when people come into those meetings that focused, the meetings last shorter periods of time and you get more done. And there was another book out by Roger Pearman called "I'm Not Crazy, I'm Just Not You." Is really an interesting book. And then Catherine and Isabel, I have a book out called "Gifts," G-I-F-T-S, Differing, where it talks about this whole idea about, you know, differences amongst the different preferences. So I think those are some really good reads connected with this topic that I think would be of value to you in terms of trying to pick up on some of those things. Catherine Myers and Isabel Briggs Myers. Catherine is the mother and Isabel is the daughter. So look, yes, sir.
First, I apologize. I walked in here while you had already started delivering your presentation. Okay. But yes, key question.
Yes, sir.
On sustainable effectiveness, what is one of the best ways of, you know, building a vision when you have a team working with you? I mean, knowing that people don't really work for you, they work with you. Thanks.
That's a good question, right? And part of my work before I came to work for the Air Force in my business was core of it was mission, vision, values. If you don't have mission, vision, values, for me, it's hard for me to work with you because you have no foundation, right? And so even though you've got a team of folks who don't work for you, there's got to be some relevancy, right, in terms of why this team is put together. So having clarity about why are we here, why are we doing this? And then the vision piece becomes, what is it that we need to get done that is going to be true to that relevancy down the road, whether it's 4 months, 5 months, 6 months, or whatever. That becomes, now there's a gap. There's a gap between why we came together and where we want to be in a certain point in time. Now, in that gap is where now the work needs to be done, right? In terms of sitting down and breaking things down, What's my role? What's your role? What's her role? What's his role? And then doing that actual work. I think a lot of times, it's not going to happen immediately. I mean, it really takes some thought to sit down and understand what is this vision that we're trying to get to. And I think because of the fact that we're so focused on getting it done, having a conversation about vision becomes one of those things, well, that's a nice to have conversation, Reg. We're trying to get things done right now. And I think that vision piece is just critical. I mean, to me, it's critical to allowing everybody to do their best work. If we're sitting around the table and we're just kind of talking about doing something, there's probably some direction about that. But when we say we're trying to get here, everybody on that team now can sit down based on their experience, based on their expertise, based on their passion, and kind of figure out, how do I want to fit in this equation? What is my unique contribution to make to this whole thing? You can do that when there's a vision. When there's no vision, I'm just doing something. I'm just doing something that may or may not get me there. So spending the requisite amount of time, I think sitting down and really, really having a meaningful conversation about that vision piece, I think is critical to anything. So let me just kind of go back and just reiterate again, just what an honor it has been for me to be here and to be some small part of this celebration, this education, this developmental networking process that's designed to allow you to continue to and do greater things than you're doing right now. You know, one of the things I found really fascinating as I was walking around yesterday was, I don't know whether I had any aspirations to be an engineer or not when I was growing up. But what I do know was I never saw any that looked like me, right? And so the mere fact that you know, you can see people thriving. I mean, that's doing things that maybe you never thought that you would do. It at least opens the door to the possibility that I could do that if I wanted to, or at least looking at it, right? But to not have the vision of seeing somebody that looks like you doing something that you never thought about trying to do, it might close this door that somebody never explores. Right? I think this is so powerful, so powerful. You know, so I don't know if you know it or not, but there are people that are looking at you saying, you know, I never imagined I could do that, or I could do that, because you're showing up in that space and you're doing it. And I really applaud you for that, really applaud you for that. So it was my pleasure to be here, my privilege to be here. I'm so glad that you all the places you could have been today, you chose to be in this room. I really thank you for doing that. And just continue to do the great things you're doing. Here's my email and my phone number. If I can be of help to you in any way, please reach out and let me know. I mean, remind me that we met here in this conference, and I will figure out a way to make time to get back to you to have the kind of conversation you want to have about whatever you want to talk about. And you have my word on that.
Thank you for listening to Using Awareness of Natural versus Demonstrated Type Functions to Build Resiliency and Sustainable Effectiveness, a professional development seminar presented by the U.S. Air Force, featuring Dr. Reggie Crane of the Air Force Technical Application Center. If you have enjoyed this presentation, be sure to attend the BEA STEM Global Competitiveness Conference. For more information on how you, your company, or organization can take part, visit www.bea.org. For college students, contact us at 410-244-7101.